Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. So Jack, wow, didn't his passion shine through?
Yeah.
He absolutely loves what he does. And what was most impactful for you?
I think most impactful for me was when he was talking about how they use application to recruit people, and they made it more like a game, he said, almost. So it feels less like daunting trying to make your CV perfect. And then instead, they're actually assessing your skills, so they actually know what the person is like through that application. And also he was giving me some gems about networking, so I feel like I must start my networking.
Definitely. I'm sure you'll be connecting with him on LinkedIn before the day is out.
Yeah.
Let's let the audience dive in and learn about Jack and Publicis Group.
Hi, I'm Jack, and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm very excited today to have my co-host Nathan with me. Nathan, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Nathan. I'm a student studying business, psychology and media.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today as a co-host and interviewer. And let's introduce our guest, Jack. Jack, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jack. I'm a senior talent acquisition partner at Publicis Group, which, for those of you that don't know, is a big advertising powerhouse in the UK and globally. So yeah, very excited to be here.
A very big. How many people work there?
Well, UK, there's just over 6,000 of us now. And then globally, it's over 100,000. So we're talking, yeah, one of the big hitters
yes.
in the sector.
Amazing. Right. Well, Nathan, first question.
I was just going to ask, what was the path that led you to work at Publicis Group UK?
Cool. How long have you got? What a question that is. So I've worked in advertising my whole career so far. So that's 10, 11 years. Mm. I've come straight out of school, didn't go to university, wasn't going to be the path for me at all that. And I was like, actually, I just want to get into the world of work. And if I'm honest, I just stumbled upon media, advertising, communications as a sector. I knew nothing about it when I applied, like absolutely zero. I think I actually remember going onto the government's national apprenticeship website and literally applying all. And just been like, let's see what we get back. And that was how I started. And I had a few interviews in a few different sectors. Ironically, I actually turned down a job in recruitment right at the very start. And that's where I find myself today, albeit still in advertising. But I just really liked the vibe, if I'm totally honest with you. I went to an interview. It was like an assessment center at Mediacom. Formerly Mediacom, now Essence Mediacom. That was where I started out. And I just felt like it was the type of industry that I would like the people all seemed quite high energy. There was talk of like work that they do with really big brands. And I was just quite intrigued by it from day one. And fortunately enough, you know, to land a job. And then from there, I've worked a number of different jobs in the sector, moved sort of away a few years ago now from actually doing sort of like media planning and buying and more into sort of the people side. So that was always my big passion, was like the people. For me, the people in the industry are what make it amazing. And so sort of managed to move into a people related role. And then I've just sort of found myself at Publicis because, you know, I like working for the big hitters. And like I said, I started out at Mediacom. They were the number one agency at the time, and Group M were sort of leading the way. And that's changed. And now sort of Publicis, it feels like it's Publicis's turn to do that. So I find myself there now. So it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but I mean, to start with, it was I stumbled into the industry. And then from there, I spent the first few years just trying to figure it out and work out what's right for me, what's wrong for me, what jobs do I like, what jobs do I definitely not like. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I managed to, yeah, just figure out that it feels like my purpose is working with people. Mm. And that's where I am at Publicis today.
What made you have the idea that you didn't want to go to uni? You said you came straight out of school and went straight to work. What straight away from uni?
You know what? I went and looked around some universities when I was in sixth form, and I just never felt comfortable. It just never felt like it was the path for me. If I'm totally honest with you, I did okay at school. I'd never really enjoyed it. it was never really sort of my environment. I like to have a bit of freedom and sort of to be able to do things in a slightly different way. And I think education for me just wasn't the right path. It wasn't an easy decision to make, if I'm completely honest with you, because I think out of all of my friends at the time, I was maybe the only person that didn't go. So it felt like, oh, am I making the wrong decision here? I mean, this is sort of 10 years ago now. So I think that the view and the attitude to apprenticeships has changed so much for the better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I never felt comfortable going around. I never felt like I was going to be at home there. And then when I went and did some job interviews, albeit for jobs that I didn't end up, you know, taking, I felt like the work environment was just a better fit for me at that point. It just felt like that was the right path. Mm-hmm. So it was a big decision, but it also wasn't. I think in the back of my head, I always knew I just want to get into work. I'm not particularly bothered about going and learning something else. And for the sector that I'm in anyway, you know, talent acquisition, recruitment in advertising, that degree is not, it's not needed to be, to be completely honest with you. There are sectors out there where absolutely you need to go. You need to get that degree and, you know, you need to have that university education behind you. But for what I find myself doing, I don't. So it was a calculated decision. It was also a lucky decision that I didn't really know, to be completely honest with you. And I think I always had that in the back of my mind that when I took that apprenticeship at Mediacom at the time, someone there did say to me, like, this apprenticeship's for a year. If you could always go to university afterwards if you want to. So like that also made me a lot more comfortable knowing I'll do this for a year and I can just reassess it. Mm. Whereas the other way around, it might have been a bit trickier to have gone to uni for a year and then, you know, dropped out and then tried to get into work. So look, I'm lucky it all worked out, but it's a really, really pivotal moment, I think, for people to make that decision. There's a lot of pressure on young people.
But you can retrain at any age now, can't you? Yeah. You see people in their 40s suddenly going, right, I want to learn this. And then they go to university or they do some kind of part-time course. One thing that was interesting, so you stumbled into our industry, which a lot of people do. Yeah. Is that still what you're seeing? Because obviously being at that talent acquisition position, you get to see a lot of it. Are a lot of the junior people coming into the business stumbling as well?
I would say yes and no. I think that they probably stumble upon hearing about the industry, which was sort of a step that wasn't there for me. Yeah. Like I just literally saw a job, applied, did a bit of mine and was just fortunate to get a role. So I don't think people are doing that as much now, but I think a lot of the time when I'm out and about at universities, at schools, at colleges, talking to people about advertising, they don't really know it's a career path still, if I'm completely honest. So that initial bit, that's definitely, I see it in students, a light bulb moment of, wow, actually, this is a career that's can be creative, it can be really data-driven, it can be all about people. Like, I didn't even consider this.
Yeah.
But then I think most of the people that are applying now do have a bit more of an idea about what it is than maybe sort of people 10 years or so ago.
Yeah.
But it still feels to me like it's an industry where not enough people know about it. And if every student in the country knew about it, we would have so many applications, which would be amazing.
Out the door.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and that's part of the reason for this podcast is to help put us on the map more so as an industry. So
I was going
to
say, for the people out there that I don't actually know what your role is, would you like to know?
Yes. Yeah, I probably should have started with that, shouldn't I?
Yeah, it's all good.
So as I said at the top, I'm a senior talent acquisition partner and I'm in the emerging talent team at Publicis. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a long-winded job title, but that basically means me and my team, we look after entry-level hiring and then sort of the programs behind it. So if you're an aspiring apprentice, we would help guide you through that application process. When you're in role, we would help get you through the qualification that you're doing. If you are at university and you're thinking about graduating, you know, soon, there's a sort of a work stream that you can apply for into like our executive programs. That works in a similar way. We'll help guide you through it. Depending on what area you go and work in, there's programs behind it, there's training, there's development, there's support all the way. You might be an aspiring intern as well. And we've got some really great career paths there if you're looking to gain a bit of experience before committing full time. So you could even be a career changer and we're sort of exploring that market properly for the first time this year, which is really exciting. So people that have maybe got 5, 10, 15 years, even more than that, experiencing something else, but go, actually, I'm quite interested in advertising because that's a massively untapped market. So yeah, so my job basically is get out there, talk to people about publicist group, understand, like, from students' perspectives for the purpose of this conversation, like, what are you interested in? Have you thought about advertising? Trying to then upskill you a little bit on what are the roles? Because that's the other thing. Often go and talk to people and they go, oh, that sounds great. And they go, but there's 100 different roles I can apply for. How do I know what I'm right for? So we spend a lot of time, yeah, educating people around actually what are these different roles you could go into. And we do that through webinars, insight days, going to careers fairs, doing talks at universities, all the fun stuff. So it's a combination of attracting, selecting, and then developing emerging talent.
And when you're attracting and, I mean, when you're selecting that talent, what skills would you say is most important that you look for?
That is, I think that is one of the most important questions we'll probably talk about today, because we look at the skills of people and the strengths of people, not the experience. And I think that sometimes people do look at advertising or media or communications jobs and think, I've never worked in it. I've never had an internship in it. Like, I don't know too much about it. Maybe that industry is not for me, but that's really not the case. Because we value the skill set and the potential that people are bringing. We have a whole skills and strength framework, basically, that we base all of our hiring off of. Typically, it's things such as communication. I think any job in this sector, you've got to be able to communicate, whether or not you're doing a client-facing job, a data job, you've got to be able to talk to people, because effectively that's what we're doing, right? We're putting ads out there. We're talking to our consumers. So you've got to be able to do that. We focus a lot as well, depending on the role that you go into, on other core skills, like, are you organized? Can you adapt to certain situations? Are you resilient? Can you work as part of a team? And all of these things are skills that people have got, regardless of what you've studied, if you've worked, if you haven't worked. You'll have those skills through life, right? Just from your own studying that you've done or your own experiences. And we really want to take those skills that people have got and bring you into this sector. All the technical stuff, you know, we can teach you. That's the mindset. Don't get me wrong, there are certain opportunities that we have that are so technical that you do require a specific technical skill set. But for the majority of them, especially into media, actually that core skill and strength set is the biggest thing. But I do think that the level of interest that you have as individual is also really, really important, because I'm sure we've all seen it. People that have got the skill set, come into media or comms or advertising, whatever the role is, if you're not genuinely quite intrigued and curious by what brands do and sort of advertising on a broader scale, it might not be the industry for you, if I'm completely honest with you. You do need that interest in, you know, do you see an ad and go, oh, that's really creative, or I really like what they've done there. If you've got that type of mindset, then that already is a great starting point. So yeah, the skill set, the strength set, like your natural skills as a person, they are the key things really that we look for. Like I said, all the technical stuff comes later. We wouldn't expect you to have that.
It's a sector that's constantly changing, isn't it?
And, absolutely.
And being able to turn on that mindset as well, because actually we're all being advertised to the whole time, aren't we? Especially if you're on social media and even just walking around London today, there's adverts everywhere. But actually being able to turn on your brain to go, did I like that? What did I like about that? How did that affect me? Is really interesting. And being able to, actually being at the Drum today, the Drum is an amazing source for, if you were going for an interview in advertising, to go and find, like, they write up about everything to do with all the different types of adverts that have come out, the big campaigns, and being able to go and have an opinion on it, because actually it's one thing that we all can have is an opinion. You might not be, there isn't really a right or wrong. It's how did it feel to you? Did it talk to you? Were you the audience that was intended for? And therefore, what are your thoughts and feelings on it?
I was actually going to say, so that selection process, what is that actually like? Do you use, like, what kind of apps do you use to find those people? How do you find the correct people?
Great question. So our outreach sort of, like, plans and strategies probably split into a couple of different areas. We work with a lot of, like, external partners. So organizations like yourself who can give us that reach to students, because we describe ourselves as a small but mighty team. There's only sort of like six of us. That's actually quite small for an emerging talent team. So we leverage partners to help us get out there, talk to schools, colleges, sixth forms, attend big careers fairs. There are some fantastic partners. If you're a young person looking to get into advertising, there are some great networks that you can for free go and be part of. And that will massively open your eyes, I think, to the world of advertising. So that's a big, big factor for us, is utilising those partnerships. And then we do some of our own direct outreach as well. Like, we'll go out to certain universities or schools or colleges that we've just built up relationships with over the last few years. That's an ever-expanding list year on year. So yeah, that's how we do it. So we try and get out there in person as much as we can, because actually having that face-to-face conversation with people, I think, is so valuable. So it's a combination of those things, really.
How long have you been at Publicis Group for?
I'm 3 years tomorrow, actually. Wow. So the time has absolutely flown by. Yeah. And to your point, Becky, earlier about change, my word, honestly, we've experienced everything in just 3 years, which has been incredible, from, like, you know, properly recovering from the pandemic and sort of that mass hiring that there was in 2022 to last year. Publicis did incredible in terms of their new business wins, and we won some huge accounts. So we've seen it all, from sort of, yeah, recovering from sort of the economy struggling to now being sort of right at the top of the industry. It's been quite incredible.
Yeah.
Few years. On one hand, it feels like I've been there longer. On the other hand, it feels like I've been there about 2 weeks. It's been an amazing few years.
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favourite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
It sounds like this is like your favourite job, I would say. What is your favourite job that you've had?
I do love this job I'm currently in. In hindsight and with nostalgia, I do look back to my first year when I was an apprentice, like, just fresh into the world of work. And I'm like, I had no idea what I was doing for probably that whole 12 months. And I just embraced every single challenge or every single project that was thrown at me. And I look back on that, and like, that year was quite incredible, because it was, so you learnt the skills about the industry, but it was just that piece of like, you're at work, you know, and that shift from, you know, you finish your A-levels or, you know, whatever it is you're doing at college or sixth form, and you go into that environment and it's like, it is completely different. And some days I was like, this is hard. Other days I was like, this is the best thing in the world. So look back on that first year and just starting with a completely blank canvas and building stuff up to where I am now is amazing. And I'm lucky that I'm still in touch with quite a few people from that first year as well, some of who are still in the industry as well, which is really great to see. So I'd probably have to say it's a tie of what I'm doing at the moment, because I just love being able to talk to people about this amazing industry that we've got that people still don't know about. But that first year of actually experiencing it was very, very unique.
Yeah, foundational for everything, I guess.
Completely. And whilst that job was so far removed from what I'm doing now, there's so much I learned in that year that I still rely on today. Mm. Mainly those communication bits and how to deal with slightly trickier situations. Mm. I still rely on that now. Mm. Even though I'm not, you know, buying TV campaigns like I was when I first started, a lot of the skills that I needed to do that, I'm just applying in a, you know, in a talent setting instead. Yeah.
Yeah. And from a recruitment perspective, so out to university schools, meeting all these wonderful students. So say Nathan wants to apply to Publicis Group. What happens? What's the process?
So we've got a very different process. It's very innovative. We sort of utilize tech now in our processes. We've, for pretty much all of our entry-level roles, excluding the really, really technical ones, for pretty much all of them now, it's a CV-less process.
Wow.
So you don't have to worry about tailoring your CV, writing a cover letter, because let's face it, a lot of those processes, they're extremely time-consuming for the candidate, right? I bet you've updated your CV
100 times.
Yeah, it's mad, right?
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at a CV for an entry-level person now, we can't really get to know you from it, if I'm completely honest with you, because like, there won't be too much on it, because why would there be, right? You're not going to have extensive work experience or, you know, extensive education, because it's like the age you're at and where you're at in life, there's not going to be a lot there. So we've actually explored a different process now, where we partner with a wonderful organisation called Arctic Shores, who help us with gamified online assessments.
Wow.
That people complete. So you would basically, you'd go onto the job application. There are two intent questions we get people to answer, which usually are, why do you want to career in this sector?
Mm.
Why Publicis? Because that why is really important for us to just sort of know that you're in the right place. And then, yeah, you'd get an automatic email to complete one of these gamified online assessments. It takes between sort of 30 and 45 minutes to complete. you will feel like you're playing an online game because that's what the technology is, right? So it won't feel like I'm applying for a job. And I've spoke to some students and they're like, it was really strange because like I just felt like I was not applying for a role. And it's like, actually, that's the power of it. Yeah. Because, you know, you completing that gamified assessment, it really allows the technology and then us to understand who are you? What are your strengths? You know, what are you good at in certain gamified scenarios? And then once you complete that, as a candidate, you'll be sent a personalised report, which breaks down all of your sort of key strengths and skills. So straight away, whether or not you get through that initial stage or not, you've got a 4 or 5 page document that contains all the feedback about you, which is really, really cool. And when we set this technology up with Arctic Shores, it was about a year and a bit ago, we all in the team did a sort of a dummy run at the application. And the report that I got back was scary, how accurate it was. So it's really, really great for, you know, for you as a candidate to see that. And then if you make it through that stage, then you'll have a call with one of us in the team, someone in the emerging talent team. It's not an interview. We don't frame it as an interview. We frame it as a call with a recruiter to answer questions that you've got and for us to just sort of make sure that you have all of the information that you need and just to outline what the rest of the process looks like. Obviously, we sense check a few things, you know, like start dates and eligibility for roles and things like that. But it's much more of a, what do you need from us? What are you missing? And then from there, if that's all good, you'll move through to either an assessment centre or an interview. Again, depends on the specific role that you're in process for. But the majority of stuff does go through an assessment centre, which is some are virtual, some are in person. And that's a whole morning or a whole day where you have the opportunity across a few different exercises to showcase your skills. So you'll do group exercises where we'll give you like media advertising briefs and you can work together to come up with ideas and present them back. You'll have a go at sometimes doing a pre-prepared presentation where we might say, you know, a week before the assessment centre, come and talk to us about a campaign that you thought was particularly successful and why. Again, so we can understand your thinking and how would you approach that type of task. You do some shorter interviews, so sort of between sort of 25 and 30 minutes. It's a whole different range of exercises and we've designed it up so that there's an opportunity for each person to be in an environment that's best suited for them. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, not everybody's great in an interview sitting opposite somebody. For some people, that's their worst nightmare. For other people, perfect.
Yep.
The same with a group exercise, right? Some people are like, oh, that's not the best situation for me. And others, it really is. So we do it so that everyone's got the opportunity to showcase the best version of themselves in an area that sort of plays to their strengths. So you'd go through that or you'd go through an interview. Again, the interviews tend to be if it's a really technical role and actually you don't need that interaction element in it. But the majority of stuff is an assessment centre. And then from there, sort of within maximum of a week of you doing that, you'd get a call from us with either the good news, congratulations, you know, you've secured a job offer and we sort of talk you through sort of that process. Or if you've missed out, we'll then have a call with you where we'll chat through the feedback. So what did you do really well? What were the areas maybe where you were slightly lacking and sort of help to upskill you? And I think that's the really important bit. It's not you've got one shot. If you don't get it, you're gone. There are so many candidates that come to an assessment centre, just miss out. We do sort of a feedback call. We do a bit of upskilling with you around, you know, maybe you could have articulated your points a bit clearer. Here's some guidance on maybe how you could do that. And then we can get you back in play for something else. So it's the whole process, I think anyway, is now set up. So it's very much two-way. We want to get to know your strengths and we want you to ask us about the role, the process, or ask us if you need help. At any stage. It's very, very, very different to the traditional way.
Brilliant though. It really is. Really is. And also the feedback side's really important.
So important.
And I suppose you're in a privileged position as a large company with a big team that you can make space to do that.
Yes.
One thing that I do always say to young people is if you ever are not successful and you haven't been given feedback, badger them until you get feedback because you've put your time and effort into it. And I think you can only learn from that feedback.
100%.
And we can't all get everything. And especially if you're going, I mean, I'm guessing when you're doing an assessment centre, there's lots of roles at the end of it. It's not just for one role.
Correct.
But if you are in a position where you're applying for just one role and there's 10 candidates, then you have got a low chance of getting it. Not everyone's going to get it, but getting that feedback is incredible to help you then go, what can I do differently next time? What can I learn from?
And that's where that resilience piece is really important as well, because you're not going to get every single thing you apply for. And it's about like just taking it as a learning opportunity and then being like, right, how can I apply that next time round?
Yeah.
Like I said, I can't tell you the amount of people that have just missed out and then in the weeks or months later come back and do absolutely amazing because they've really taken that feedback on board. Mm. So yeah, I would say anyone in a process, if you can get feedback, definitely get it. And that's where that piece up front, you know, the Arctic Shores technology that we've got is great, because if you don't make it through that very first application stage, you're still getting the feedback of that personalized report. Mm. Like this is actually where your strengths lie. Whereas I think, you know, the alternative process where you don't have something like that and it's a CV and a cover letter, we've all applied that way at some point and just got an automated rejection and you're like, I don't really know why I've not, you know, why I've not got it. Like I've got no idea. Is it, you at least get that big in-depth report, which is super useful.
Yeah. Well, and also depending on your skills to put a CV together, which might not be similar to the skills for the job you're going completely. For, you end up having created a CV that may or may not sell you particularly well. Mm. And therefore you've already disadvantaged yourself if you weren't very good at doing that. But if you didn't know you weren't good at it, then it's just this horrible cycle. I hate looking at CVs. Yeah. I find it so tricky.
They're just not personable anymore. No. And I think they used to be. I think, you know, if you go back sort of, I don't know, 10 years or so ago, you could get a sense of who is somebody from their written application, from a CV. But like now, if we're speaking completely candidly, like pretty much everybody's putting CVs and cover letters into AI to try and maximise the efficiency of it and make it appear, you know, really appealing. But you lose that personal touch. Yeah. Whereas this process now, like I would feel so much more, if you applied for one of our jobs for our process, I would have such a great idea before we even talk on the phone about what are you really good at. So already I can structure that call to focus on that. Mm. Yeah. Whereas if it's just a CV, like I can't tell if you're organized or analytical or if you've got good attention to detail or if you're creative, it's really, really difficult to be able to pull that out.
And also, especially being a young person where at school we're taught in subjects, we're not taught in skills, you might not know what your skills are.
Yeah.
You might have a bit of an idea, but some of it, you might have these amazing skills that you just, no one's told you.
Yeah.
You are brilliant at teamwork and leading a team to get to the end of a project, and you might not realise how incredible that is for the world of work. So actually that is just brilliant, isn't it?
I couldn't agree more with that. And I think the way to look at the gamified assessment that we've got is it's not a pass or fail.
Yeah.
It's how suitable are your innate strengths for the strengths needed for this role? So it might be you apply for a job and you don't get through. That doesn't mean you're not great. Mm. It just might mean that the role you've applied for doesn't play to your strengths. Mm. And where you get that report and where we can look at your report, we can also help you in terms of, okay, this role's not right, but it seems you're extremely analytical. You're great with numbers. Have you considered a role in programmatic, for example, instead, because that would play to your strengths more. So it helps with that piece as well. So it's not rejection, it's redirection. It's probably the best way to look at that first bit if you don't get through. Because if we did just put you through, you'd probably not succeed because your strengths don't match up. So like we're actually seeing it further down the line as well. It's helping us with retention rates, with people, you know, getting promoted quicker and all that, like making sure that we are putting people in the right position for them. So I think there's so much power in it.
And I was going to say, how exactly do you upskill the candidates and how could the candidates help to actually upskill themselves?
Great question. The biggest area at the initial sort of stage where people don't get through is not being able to, in those intent questions, articulate their why. And if you talk to most people in the industry, they'll probably all say your why is really, really, really important. Mm. But I think it's easier said than done, because if someone says, okay, like, why do you want this role in digital? Most of the time people are like, actually, I'm not 100% sure. So I think there's a few things you can do. There's great online resources like The Drum, like Campaign, where you can educate yourself a little bit actually around like what is this industry and what the different roles look like. At Publicis, we've set up some completely free, open to everyone, educational offerings. So like every month we do a discovery session, which is just a webinar where you can sign up all on Zoom, last Friday of every month. It's an hour. Come and learn about what all the different career paths look like. So straight away, when you then come to apply, why do you want this role? You already know a little bit more than somebody that's maybe not taken an hour to learn about that. And then we back that up with in-person insight days as well. So you might come to a webinar and then go, I think I want to roll in media planning. I'm not 100% sure. Cool, that's no problem. Come and apply to join one of us at our, you know, come and join us at one of our quarterly insight days and we'll go into it in way more detail. So we'll drill down into what are you going to be doing. We'll give you some actual tasks to have a go at. So we opened the doors to publicists and to advertising a couple of years ago to tackle that exact problem. You know, we ask people why this role and they go, well, I don't know and I can't find anything to help educate me. So we're trying to help people out as much as we can. So that's been a great tool, I think, for people to join that webinar, to come to those days, but to do a bit of sort of research and reading on those resources yourself, even 10 minutes, it would be amazing what you can learn or pick up pretty quickly.
We were talking about LinkedIn earlier,
yeah,
and Nathan was just getting set up on LinkedIn. And I said, to me, there's nothing to stop you. Say you've decided publicist is the place and you've decided I want to be a media planner. Go find some media planners and just send them a message. I'm a young student. I really want to get into media planning. Any chance I can ask you some quick questions, or we could jump on a quick call. Worst that will happen is they won't respond, but nothing's lost. Exactly. The best thing that will happen is they say, sure, let's do 20 minutes on a Zoom and I'll tell you a bit about my job. And oh my word, then if you could bring that to an interview saying that you've gone out of your way to learn even more, that's just gold dust, isn't it?
Networking, honestly, like one of the big things that I was taught relatively early on was like never stop networking, even if you're just networking without a purpose and it's just to meet people and understand who works in what agency, especially in advertising and media. It is so valuable to do that, to put yourself out there, because you never know when those connections will help you. So I definitely think if you've got the opportunity to do that, definitely. But LinkedIn's pretty powerful still. Yeah. That whole piece around, you know, having a personal brand helps you stand out.
Yeah. And even if you don't reach out directly, if you go and follow some of these people, because you don't have to connect, you can just follow, you'll see what they're posting and you'll see them saying about what they love about their job or a campaign that they've just launched. And then you start to go, I want to be that person. I want to be able to post about that. I mean, especially at publicists, you do some incredible work, like campaigns that we will all know and have seen before. And when you were at Aspiration Digital, some of the campaigns you showed off were just, we all know them. And it's like, wow, I could work on that.
Yeah.
I could be a part of that.
It's the realization of like, yes, you can.
Yeah.
You can come and be a part of it. Absolutely. And like, just by doing some of those things that we've spoke about, that definitely will help you learn a little bit more. But going back to sort of the first point, that why is so important. And I think that there's no rush. You don't have to figure it out within a day. Mm. But I think the earlier you can start thinking about it, then when it does come to the point of application, you're in a really, really good position.
Mm. Have you got any really cool stories? Obviously, so you've been at Publicis Group about 3 years. Yeah. So they might be ones that are longer than your time, of someone that's come in as an apprentice and then is doing something really exciting now within the group.
So there's so many. Like, we've got some incredible success stories of people that join in an entry-level position and have worked there all the way up. So we're talking like managing director level, like really senior roles. There are so many people in that position. There's a couple of people actually that were, I think it's in about 6.5, 7 years, they've started as an exec. So sort of the bottom level full-time position. And they're now running their own teams. So it's like, it's maybe when you start, it feels I'll never be able to get to that point. But like, actually, you talk to people at Publicis, most of them have started there and worked their way up. And it's quite incredible, really, because in this sector, people do move around quite a lot. But I've come across a lot of people at Publicis that they'll be like, oh, no, I've only ever worked here. And like, this is, you know, I've had so many opportunities, and where the business is so big, I've been able to sort of move around a little bit and work on different accounts. And they're now running teams, which I just think's, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing, because sometimes you start and you think, maybe I'll be here for a few years and then I'll see where I want to go. But actually, when you talk to people that are doing it, it just makes it feel a lot more attainable. Yeah. So yeah, there are some great success stories of it.
Love that.
I was just going to actually ask, how does Publicis actually make money and revenue to help candidates actually, you know, get to where they want to go?
Great question. The piece around how an agency makes money, again, how long have you got? We're so lucky that we work with some of the biggest and best brands like in the UK. Like at the minute we're working with, and this is just to name a few, the likes of McDonald's and Lego and Sky and Disney. You know, if you think of a big brand, more often than not, you know, publicists are working with them. And their campaigns that we're running with them they're huge. You know, the budgets that we're spending on clients' behalf are massive. So obviously the bigger the client, bigger the campaign, usually the sort of more money that we're able to make as a business. But I think last year we had something like 6% growth, something like that. Maybe don't quote me exactly on that. I might need to check that. But for a business so big to be growing so much, it's quite unheard of, to be completely honest with you. So yeah, the new business wins are huge for us in terms of that money-making side of things.
And does that change your strategy throughout the year? Because I guess at the beginning of the year, every business, every team puts together their strategy, their plans. We think we're going to need to hire X amount of new people. But then they go and win McDonald's that wasn't on the roadmap. And then suddenly it's like, oh, okay, now we need more people. So is there, does that happen?
Absolutely. That happened a lot last year. we won Sky, Lego and L'Oreal in media, all within the space of about 3 to 4 weeks.
Wow.
So, yeah, and you're talking of three of the biggest accounts that there are. So that exact scenario happened. And it was very much like, okay, we were expecting to be doing this. This has all come in. So we've got to be all systems go and we've got to adapt and make it work. Because when it comes to hiring for those big brands, there's a deadline and we've got to hit it. The same way that, the teams that are running the campaigns, they have a go live date. They have to be there for it. So we have to adapt a lot. And I actually think adaptability is one of the biggest skills, along with communication, that you need to work in this sector. I think if you're someone that can deal with a little bit of chaos and also quite enjoy the madness, that's how I describe it to people. It's like beautiful chaos sometimes where you're like, how are we going to get all this done? We always find a way.
Yeah.
We always do. But I think that adaptability thing in any role, because we felt it at that period because we've got to hire everyone. But then if you fast forward 6 weeks when everyone's in role, they've then got to turn campaigns around really, really quickly. So it's sort of like that chaos sort of makes its way down and everybody feels it at some point. But again, for me, that's something that I just love about this sector. That it is a little bit mad sometimes and you never quite know what's going to happen. And I like that. I like that. Not every day, but I do like that overall that I'm going into work on a Monday. I think I know what's going to happen this week, but I might be way off and I might have to completely change what I'm doing. And for me, I find that quite exciting.
And I think that is one of the key things for someone wanting to get into this sector is realising, do you thrive on that or not?
Yes.
Because I've seen people sink or swim in those scenarios. And because they've sunk doesn't mean they're not a good person, that they're not going to go on to have a brilliant career somewhere. But some people don't like the context switching that comes with agency world because you have got that raft of clients and they're all plates in the air that we've got to keep up. It is a lot of 1 minute you're over here and this is the biggest priority. And then, oh no, something's changed. And now this is the biggest priority. But don't forget about that one, but do this one. And you need to be able to juggle that.
100%. 100%. And that's adaptability, resilience, and the ability to keep yourself organized.
Yeah.
So, so key.
Yeah.
For those people that actually are planning to go to work after sixth form or after school, how would you say, because you did it yourself, how would you say... from experience, your work-life balance was, how would you say to maintain it and, keep that balance? How would you say it's the best?
I mean, it was a shock to the system going from a really structured sort of school, sixth form college day to the world of work where there is the expectation of you sort of need to manage it yourself as long as you get the work done. So that was a big shock for me. I was like, what? So no one's going to tell me every specific point, what I need to do and how I need to do it. It's like, you need to get this done by this time, off you go. So that I found that challenging to start with, just having structure but not having structure was an interesting one for me. I think work-life balance, I mean, to start with, I'd probably say after the first couple of months of just getting used to the routine, work-life balance wasn't an issue, to be completely honest with you. To start with, it was because I had no idea how I was structuring days or weeks or what I was doing. But once you sort of get into the rhythm of it, it's absolutely fine. But I think it's a really important thing for anyone starting out to always have that front of mind, what is my work-life balance? Because we all love this industry. Everyone's going to spend a lot of years at work, but you've got to keep time for yourself as well. And I think if you can set those boundaries quite early, but also be flexible when you need to be, that's really, really important. I think that will mean that you'll have a really, really healthy work-life balance. And I think every single person's striving for that, right? We all want to have a great job. We want to work hard and, be successful, but we also want to have a life outside of work. So I think knowing yourself and how you operate best is great. But the flexibility that advertising media does bring is also really, really great, because I work with people who are like myself. I'm an early riser. I like getting up, and I'm probably most productive between 7 a.m. and 11. Whereas I've got people that, you know, are in the team with me who they operate best 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. So actually, I think flexibility in this industry, it's maybe a little bit misunderstood, because if you do work differently, it's incredibly flexible for that, incredibly flexible.
Yeah. And I think you touched on there that sometimes you do need to go over and above, I don't know, big campaigns going out for Sky. But actually, the most good businesses in our sector, and I'm sure Publicis is the same as my agency, it's give and take, isn't it?
Completely.
Some points you've got to give a bit more, but you're absolutely going to get that back at some point. And that's... being able to recognise that and go, actually, this might be affecting my work-life balance for a week or two, but actually I'm really excited about this and I'm enjoying it, and therefore actually I don't mind that much. Yeah. But I know that that's going to come back and be rewarded back to me for having given my extra.
Yeah, and I think just having your own well-being front of mind, and I think this generation now that are coming into the workforce are brilliant, absolute, probably the best generation I think that there's been for quite some time at being like, how am I? Yeah. I think that's really, really important. Like, I've been so guilty of it, of just being like, I'll park how I'm feeling. I'll get all of this stuff done. I'll worry about that later. But like, you can do both simultaneously. And I think for, like Gen Z who are coming through now, I think are fantastic at like, what is my work-life balance? How am I? And how can I make sure that everything's going well?
Yeah. Well, do you have different things in place at Publicis to help with that as well?
Yeah, we've got a whole variety of support available, which is so important. So, you know, we work with some fantastic external partners. So if you ever feel like you need to talk to a professional about something, you know, at work, something at home, you can do all of that through our we've got apps you can download from day one, and you can reach out, book consultations normally within a couple of days. So that's an amazing thing to be able to offer. I've used it myself, and I know plenty of people that have used it, and it's like you come away from those sessions and you're like, oh, that's really helped me. And like, if that wasn't there, I might not have been able to have caught that. That could have ended up, you know, becoming a major thing. We've also got mental health first aiders as well in the business. So actually, if you want to just talk to someone, again, completely confidentially, they can listen and help signpost you to resources. There are those people as well that you can talk to. We've also got an amazing, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but we've got an amazing HR team as well that are so great at listening and understanding. A lot of them have worked sort of in the industry for quite some time, so they really get it.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different mechanisms of support for you if you ever need it. And I just think that probably as an industry, we probably don't shout about that support enough, but what we've got at Publicis is brilliant.
And I guess there's also opportunities within that, if you're someone that likes to help people, to go and get the mental health first aider training and to be one of the people. I think sometimes people think when you go to work, you just do the job. But actually, especially in agency world, there's a lot of, like, we have a lot of committees for things where you can go and help advance something in the agency. We've got mental health first aiders. Yeah. And I imagine you've got a lot of that as well. So there's kind of these extra things where you can learn different skills, different leadership skills, different ways of doing things that absolutely benefit the rest of your career as well.
The other thing that we have that I'd love to talk to people about are our employee action groups, or our EAG. So these are groups of people that have got, you know, shared passion points, protected characteristics, life experiences, and they get together to do exactly what you've just said there. Can we make Publicis the most inclusive and best place to work possible? There's always improvements you can make, right? Nowhere's perfect, but our EAGs are incredible at being like, right, what are we struggling with here? Is there something, for example, in a recruitment process? Is there something in training? Is there something in the office layout? Are there like big world societal challenges that are actually going to be impacting people? They're amazing at guidance, support, and driving change. And I think that the culture, especially at Publicis, is really, really unique. And I think that's because it's driven by the people. Mm-hmm. You know, in some organisations, culture is sort of top down. And whatever the person at the top says, you must do. Whereas like at Publicis, it's not like that. It's like the people that are actually there every day on the ground, we're the ones that are driving the culture. And like, that's what makes it authentic. And that's what makes it a pretty cool place to work.
Aspiration Digital is the one-day careers conference to help young people get started in the digital industry. We are just planning our next events, and we are planning to move around the UK. So this is your opportunity. If you follow the link in the show notes, you can suggest that we come to your local area and get your school listed on the waitlist. Follow the link now and pop your details in. We hope to see you at a future event.
I was actually going to say for the newcomers, because coming to the work, like changing from school to that work structure is probably quite daunting. I was actually going to ask, what should they be aware of? What's the most challenging part of the day, of an average day at?
Great question. I mean, it's a really personal question, isn't it? Because some people will struggle in one and one area, and some in others. Like I said, my one was the freedom and the lack of proper structure to start with. I think one area where people more commonly tend to struggle is just around the communication piece. Mm. And actually, like, there is a lot of freedom to, like, here's your work, get it done sort of how you want. And I think sometimes people are afraid to speak up sometimes or ask for help. So I think that piece of, like, no question's a silly question when you start out. Like, I ask questions every single day. I've worked in this industry, you know, quite some time now, and there's still stuff where I'm like, sorry, can you explain that again? I've got no idea what that means. And I think sometimes people feel like, oh, I shouldn't ask that. They expect me to know that. When actually try to park that and just be like, understand that we've hired you under the knowledge that you've never done this before, so why would you know it? So I think making sure that you do ask those questions and ask the same question again. Don't be afraid to do that. Like, if someone explains it to you and you're not sure, sorry, can you just do you mind just running me through that again? People don't mind. Like, over-communication has, I've never heard anybody ever get annoyed with someone that's over-communicating or asking too many questions. But the other way, where you're not asking enough and you're maybe not sharing where you're at on a piece of work, I think that's where people can get frustrated quite quickly. So that tends to be sometimes where people may struggle a little bit, is just around, ask those questions and get stuck in.
And then on the other end, what is actually the best part?
That's, to narrow it down to one thing is really, really tricky. I mean, I have always found, especially when I started out, the thing that was the best and the most rewarding was seeing my campaigns out there. Like, that was just amazing. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, like a few weeks ago, I was on the phone to that sales house trying to get that TV spot. And like, there it is, it's live. And I remember, you know, I did some TV buying, I worked in digital for a bit, and I actually used to send my campaigns to my friends and be like, look at this. None of them ever cared. But I used to absolutely love seeing my work out there. I think it's a unique industry for that, where actually, like, there is an end piece of work that you can physically see, be that a TV campaign, an out-of-home billboard, you know, whatever it is that you do. I used to love that. I used to find that so, so satisfying. And working on the big brands as well was just, you know, I spent a few years working on Sky, funnily enough, who, you know, I've gone full circle with them, and working on that, their now TV range, and like, you know, promoting some of their like sports stuff on digital media and that. Like, I had such a personal interest in it. So when you get to work on a big brand like that and on a product that you're like, as a consumer, I love this, I used to find it so, so rewarding and so satisfying. So I'd probably say that was the best thing when I started out.
And what about if you're ever working on something that you don't resonate with as much? Is that something that some people struggle with? I've been given this client and I don't know, you're a young person and it's selling stair lifts to old people. And you're like, oh, I don't really resonate with this.
Yeah. That's a challenge. It is a challenge. I think that you have to approach that with, like, I would never have been exposed to this product or this sort of target audience in an advertising perspective. Think about how much you're going to take from that. Mm. Like, that's great. We've all got parts of our job that we don't like doing. Yeah. Like, let's be totally honest with each other. But you have to try to be like, okay, I might not necessarily enjoy this bit of work, but I'm gaining something from it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And sometimes the hardest things are where you learn the most.
Definitely.
Like, if you're the target audience and you absolutely love this, then you're kind of, you're all in, but you kind of know it because you're like, I know what I want to see.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, if you don't know what you want to see, I think that's quite fun as well, isn't it?
I think you touched on something that's so true there, that again, if I think back about my career so far and the points where I learned the most, it's probably in the periods where I struggled the most.
Yeah.
And like, again, look back in hindsight, I worked on a particular client for sort of about a year, and it was similar situation to what you described there. I didn't really resonate with the product. I wasn't that interested in it. Their ways of working, it was really structured, and for me as an individual, that maybe doesn't suit me perfectly. And like, I found that year really tough, to be honest. But like, I look back on it now and I'm like, wow, actually, like, I can cope with those situations if they pop up now
yeah.
because of that year. But at the time I was like, what am I going to do? You know, this isn't right for me. Like, you know, you start doubting everything, right? Is this sector the right thing for me? Yeah. But then you look back on it and you're like, I learned in that period that was hard. I learned so, so much. So again, it's about trying to sort of keep perspective in those times that are difficult. And when you start out, there will be periods like that. Mm. Like I think every single person that's ever had a job, in your first year, you go, oh, that's really tricky.
Yeah.
Or like, that's tough. Or I don't understand that. Or that client's particularly challenging for me. You just got to stick at it in those periods because you will learn so much.
Yeah, you're less likely to get put on the best account when you're brand new.
Absolutely.
Obviously, at somewhere like Publicis, you have so many great accounts. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's probably still a pretty good one.
Yeah.
But in some businesses, yeah, you're going to get something where you're like, oh, I don't know if I like this as much. But as you say, best opportunity to learn.
Definitely.
Yeah. You said earlier that when you go in and work on Monday, you're not sure what's gonna occur. Do you ever get like bored, or do you ever get I can't think of how to put
it. Disillusioned with your week or
bored? Never. Honestly, I can say how hard in this industry. I'm never ever bored because there's something going on, and that something could be, you know, a new business win comes in, we've got to, you know, hire, go, or it could be that actually, you know, in the last sort of year, it's been amazing seeing the impact of like tech and AI. Mm. And like that, like, and a few years ago, I wasn't even thinking about that stuff. So there's always something happening. And I love that. I think to your point earlier, it's definitely not for everybody. And I think you've got to be able to dial that up, but also dial it down. Because I have some points of my, you know, year where I'm like, okay, this month, actually, there's not going to be as much variety. I'm working in an area where there's a lot more structure. So actually, I've got to be able to then dial that skill set up a little bit more. Bored never. Sometimes it does make me go, how am I going to get all of this done? Because again, what you said earlier about all of those plates that you spin in, you're like, is one going to drop? You always find a way to do it. So it's never the bored feeling. Sometimes it's the, oh, this is going to be tough. But again, it's a fine balance. Like, I like that. I couldn't work in a sector where I didn't have that slight feeling of anything could change at any moment. Like, I absolutely live for that. I think something where it was just structured and the same every single day, for some people, brilliant. For me, that just wouldn't be the right environment for me to be in.
Yeah, thrive on the chaos.
That's it. There's your headline. Yeah. There's your headline.
Thrive on the chaos. Well, because it is. It's fun, though. I love that. I absolutely love that. What with AI, how are you seeing that transform the workplace? What things are happening at Publicis at the moment using AI?
It's such a great question. I think if you'd have asked me that maybe a year ago, I would have gone, I don't really know still. I don't think anybody knows still. But like, I feel like we're in a really strong position now as an agency, and also from a, you know, an emerging talent recruitment perspective, around obviously the process we've got in place now where we're utilising tech way, way more. I think that you're seeing AI now really is being used more as a tool for us in media. And I think sometimes people go, is AI replacing jobs? And it's like, think of it as a tool, the same way that we would use an audience research tool or Microsoft Office. It's a tool for us. And actually what it's allowing us to do is pull in data from all across the business like we've never been able to do before. So Publicis, there's 27, 28 agencies, just sort of like in London. Like, you think about the amount of data points we've got there already, like, that's a huge number. So like, we can utilize tech to help us with like our audience profiling, you know, and that is so important. If you get your audience wrong, you know, your campaign's not going to go too well, is it? If we start targeting you for the stair lifts, probably not going to go well, right? So it's helping us with that. I think the best way to describe it is, it's allowing us to automate processes and then spend more human time on bits of working media and advertising that need the human brain.
Yeah.
So things, you know, administrative tasks, reporting, stuff like that. Does that need a human to be doing it? Probably not. We always need to overlay what data is with human context, obviously, but a lot of that can be automated and we can use tech to help us with that. When it comes to, you know, coming up with the creative concept for the latest McDonald's campaign, can tech do that? Not really. Like, that's where, you know, we need the human mind. So I think we're using it to help us, and it's just making us a lot more efficient now, which is amazing. And I think you're going to continue to see that the next few years. Like, we've got some, you know, big plans at Publicis in terms of what we're going to do over the next couple of years. So it's going to be really interesting to see how not just Publicis, but the whole industry sort of evolves with it.
Yeah. And it just makes more time and space to be creative, is at the heart of being
human. Or spend
human.
Time with the clients.
Yeah.
Those bits that, like you said, those bits that need a human to do it. That human interaction comes back to what I said earlier around that communication bit. Yeah. Like, AI and tech can never replace that. It can never replace the value of you sitting in a room with your client. Like, that's so, so valuable.
Yeah. I was chatting to someone the other day, and there's a couple of companies out there, I think, doing this, where they're creating synthetic audiences, synthetic users that you can test messaging against. So they're kind of training an audience on a type of people. But at the moment, for an agency like Publicis, if you want to go and do audience research, it can be quite time intensive especially if you want to do qualitative research where we've got to speak to people, etc. But actually, the synthetic audience side of things and being and they were saying they've done kind of like for like tests where they'll do actual humans, synthetic audience, and it's 95%. It's that close.
Incredible, isn't it?
And it's like, okay, that's really interesting, because also that speeds up our ability to move quickly. When someone knocks on the door and says, I need this campaign out now. We've got, I don't know, we've suddenly had a dip in sales we weren't expecting, and we have got some money to put behind changing this. If you can move quicker to help them achieve their results, then that's a brilliant thing. Yeah. So
I think it goes hand in hand, doesn't it, with data. And data is the biggest weapon, or one of the biggest weapons that we've got in our industry. And like you say, if we can use AI to help us understand that quicker and at a higher level of accuracy, it's only going to make our campaigns better.
Question, just obviously you mentioned in Publicis Group there's 28 agencies. 28 agencies. Is the culture different in each agency, but there's also like a Publicis way of doing things?
That's a great question. And yes, exactly that. I think all of us at Publicis Group, we all have the same sort of like core global principle, which for us is Viva la Difference. So that's the belief that we're all better, braver and stronger when we celebrate and cherish our differences. Nice. And it's about, you know, creating an inclusive culture and working together and embracing difference. Because, like, let's face it, well, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I think most people want to work in a company where everybody's got different perspectives on everything. So we all sort of buy into that and sort of like, you know, core behaviours. And then if you then go sort of a layer down and go into the specific agencies, Viva la Difference is still there and prominent, but then they will have their own culture, which doesn't differ hugely, but it does, because, you know, if you go and, you know, sit in a media agency, that will feel very different to if you go and sit in a creative agency or a production agency. So yes, there is different culture there, but those core sort of values are across every person and every agency, which is pretty powerful, really, because we've got that big message, but you can also tailor it in your own way in the agencies too.
And where you do your assessment centres, are they often looking cross-agency and you're trying to match someone to, do you know what, I think you would suit agency A versus agency B?
Absolutely. We're in a great position where our agencies work together, which is incredible, because like not all sort of holding companies have that luxury, really. Whereas our agencies are amazing and they'll do that. So yeah, we will have... recently run a round of assessment centres within our health practice. So focusing all around health, medical comms campaigns, working on big pharmaceutical brands. And we had multiple agencies within the health practice come to that. And then we'll balance, you know, what's a candidate's preference? Do you have a certain agency that you prefer? From the skills that we've observed during that assessment centre, do we think you'd be better aligned to a certain role or agency? And we balance it. So we're always understanding... Whenever we assign people a role from an assessment centre, it's always what's the best position for that candidate? Yeah. Where are we going to get the most out of that candidate? Where is that candidate going to enjoy the most? And for some people, that might be, you know, in the wave I've just done, going and working in such wellness, or it might be going and working in Langland, for example. Viva la Difference still prominent, but it's a slightly different sort of feel. Yeah. So we can use the expertise of the people in the agencies to help us decide where people go.
So do you sometimes have someone that you're like, we definitely want to give you a job, but actually the roles we were recruiting for right now, we don't think are the right fit. So you're kind of now on pause with us and we need to just wait for that opportunity to appear.
Absolutely. And that's where it comes back to what I was saying earlier, where it's we try to make it as two-way process as we possibly can. And it's like, there's a job offer for you if you want it. Fantastic. But from what we've seen, we actually think that you'd be perfect for this team, and they've got a role coming up in 2 weeks' time. So like, let's you know, pick up the conversations with you around that. So yeah, that honestly, that happens all the time where someone will apply for one job and then they'll get a job offering something completely different that they might not have even known about. But that's where, like, where we understand candidates, you know, skills and strengths on a personal level, we can then use our expertise to make sure we put you in the right place.
Yeah. What's the best reaction you've ever had when you've offered someone a job?
Oh, you know what? I had one a few weeks ago, actually, where I phoned somebody up. I was like, yeah, great news, want to make you an offer. And it was just like absolute silence the other end. And I was like, I didn't have the best Wi-Fi where I was calling from. So I was like, oh, I think it's me. And then, you know, went to hang up the phone. And then I heard some noise on the other end. I was like, oh, you're still there. Did you hear any of that? And she was like, yeah, sorry, I had to put you on mute because I was screaming so much. I was like, that, you know, those reactions are just amazing. And like, I know you asked me earlier about, you know, what do I love the most? Mm. I was like, that piece now is incredible. Like, just phoning somebody up and being like, I know how much work you've put into the process, and it's like you've got a job offer at the end of it. And then bringing them in and seeing them sort of develop and work their way up, it's amazing. But those reactions are always, they just make you weak.
I love that. Because
often as a recruiter, you know, like, majority of the calls we're having aren't making job offers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's actually quite a small percentage of our time. And I think people forget that, you know, for every person that we make an offer for, we're probably having to call another three and say, oh, like, you've missed out, here's your feedback, let's work with you. So when we do get to do that, it's amazing just hearing the joy.
I know. I miss it. So it's quite rare that I get to do that now where we've got bigger. But there was a big point where I was doing all of that. And it was just, how have you worked on your skills? Because it is hard letting someone down on a job. And obviously, it sounds like actually at Publicis, you've got lots to still offer them to help them, which is great. But not all businesses have that. And I guess like giving that feedback and
Look, it's not easy. And I think that when I first started out in talent acquisition and the thought of like, oh, I've got to do rejection calls, I don't even call them anymore. I call them feedback calls. So just straight away, it's like you're framing it in a lot more of a positive way. We just try and be really transparent from the start of the process. Do you know what I mean? That it's like, we hope to guide you through this and you get a job. If we don't, we'll give you feedback along the way that will either help you get something else at Publicis or something else somewhere in this sector or something else somewhere in a completely different sector. Because obviously my aim is, you know, I want to bring people into Publicis, but like, if I can't do that and there's someone really passionate about the sector, to just see that person go and work somewhere in the industry, I still take that as a win.
Yeah.
Or even if they go and do something in accountancy or law or, you know, completely different, it's like, well, they might have used some of the feedback we gave them to, you know, have secured that. So I think it's a mindset shift that I had to make because I was nervous to start with when you're doing it.
Yeah.
But actually, I've been a candidate myself. I've not got jobs myself when I've applied for stuff. Actually, just getting that call to be like, this is why you've not got it. Like, it's really valuable. Like, I never sort of kicked off and was like, oh, I should have, you know, you're actually really happy that you understand him why.
Yeah.
And I think candidates, most of the time, whenever we're having to do those feedback calls, I can count on one hand people that where it's, you know, not been a good call.
Yeah.
Majority of the time, people are like, I really appreciate the feedback and knowing where I can now learn and develop and go again.
And that network side of things, that like we've had people, we've had to have that feedback call. I prefer that to rejection. Yeah, I like that. And actually then a year or two later, we've hired them for something because it just wasn't the right fit. So, which is again, why actually how you react to it is quite important because you're still building that relationship. And I suppose also with LinkedIn now, I bet you end up see people, they've gone and got a job elsewhere. Probably I bet some of them end up coming back to Publicis at one point. And it wasn't the right moment in time. Yeah. It wasn't the right role. They weren't ready or whatever it might be. Yeah. But actually, that doesn't mean the door's always closed.
Completely. And some people, you know, we'll have some candidates that will apply for Publicis and actually, you know, you talk to them throughout the process, they might not secure a role. And actually, we can say to them, you know, you might be really well suited to a small independent agency to start with.
Yeah.
And actually, like, then think about a big network in a few years when you're a bit more experienced. So again, it's that whole piece earlier. It comes back to that Arctic Shores bit. Like, it's not rejection. It's like, actually, it's just redirection. And like, that's how I try to frame those feedback bits anyway, that you're a great candidate. And like, if you weren't great, you wouldn't have got this far.
Yeah.
That's the other thing as well to remember, that like, for every job we put up, we get hundreds of applications for one role.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So to actually even get down to the final 15, 20 in itself is pretty remarkable achievement. It might not feel like it at the time, but like, it really, really is. So if you get far in any process, I'm always like, you've got the skill set there to be able to do that job. It might just be that you need to refine a couple of things to just get yourself over the line.
What would you say are the biggest differences between a big agency like Publicis and a small independent? What do you see if you see someone might suit a small independent more so? What is it about?
So that's a great question. I think that the complexity of a big holding group like Publicis is a lot to get your head around. Mm-hmm. And where we've got so many different practices, department, teams, clients, like straight away, if you were to say all of those words to someone at the first point of applying, they'd be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Whereas like, you know, a smaller independent agency, don't get me wrong, it still has the same traits as a big agency, right? Of course it does. But it can sometimes be easier to grasp sort of how a thing's structured because everything is under one roof. Whereas at Publicis, you've got 6,000 people all doing completely different roles. It's like that can not always suit people. That's probably the biggest difference. It's just getting your head around how a big holding company is structured. How does it work? You're only dealing with sometimes a small part of a massive process. Whereas sometimes if you go to a, you know, a smaller agency, you might have a broader role, for example, just because you need that broader skill set. Yeah.
And you're less likely to be working on a McDonald's, for example.
Yeah.
So you can see the end-to-end through a lot more so. Whereas I imagine on your big teams for a McDonald's or a Disney, there's a lot of people on a team for that.
Yeah, there are. And it's really interesting because we have something called the Power of One at Publicis, which is, that's like our unique offering to clients, which is we can do anything in the advertising space, creative, production, data, PR, media. We have practicing teams that can do it all, which is so unique. So like sometimes we'll have clients that we'll work with on absolutely everything. And like they're our Power of One clients. That's amazing because they're then getting publicists all the way through.
Yep.
But we have other clients where we just work with them in media or we'll just do their PR for them or, you know, so we get that variety. But to your point, most of the time you are part of a process.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you can become an absolute specialist. There's pros and cons to both, right? But you can become an absolute specialist in that. And if you are at a big holding company, more often than not, you will get those big brands that you get exposed to. So everybody's different. And I think everyone at different points of their career will suit different areas. Yeah. And it's just, there's no right or wrong. It's just figuring that out as you go.
Yeah. We often talk about a career instead of, I think, typically people would say a career ladder where you have to keep moving upwards, but actually a climbing frame where you can go left or right and you still keep moving upwards. But actually you're a great example of that you started in delivering media and being a planner or a buyer, but actually you've realized the people side of what runs an agency business. So the same, someone might be listening to this that's amazing with numbers and thinks they want to go into finance, but has got really excited by the fact that they need a finance team in an agency. So, or we were talking about law earlier, they need a legal team. I mean, an agency my size doesn't. I'm sure there's a big legal team.
Yeah, we do have a legal team.
Publicis. Yeah. So it's like actually, I might like the sound of this industry, but I don't have to go and do the bit that most people do. There's all the ancillary jobs around the side of it as well. So
it's also the transferable skills, because the finance bit you touched upon there, like I feel like in the last probably 18 months, like I talked to way more students that have studied economics or finance, you know, real sort of analytical subjects. And you go, well, we need all of those skills to analyze our media campaigns. So actually you could apply all of that just in a very, very different, more creative industry. So It's people being sort of aware of that as well, that you might have studied something, but actually there'll be something in media, advertising and comms where that is a perfect fit. Like loads of people that, you know, do go off to university or study at A-level, like the social sciences, psychology, sociology. People don't always make that connection to media or advertising, but that's so common. So common, right? Understanding why do we behave in certain ways, how are we influenced by stuff. It's basically our industry, basically what we're doing. So it's again, it comes back to that point of like, what are the skills that you've got and where could you apply that?
I love that. Final questions, any that we haven't covered? Question.
I have two actually.
Two, go on then.
Okay, my first one is, what would you say is your biggest or most favourite milestone and what are you working towards in the future?
Oh, that's a big question. Biggest moment was probably having the confidence to make the shift in the type of role I was doing. You know, you'd sort of work for 4 or 5 years delivering sort of media campaigns to then be like, not that I've not used those skills, but to be like, I'm going to take the leap and go and do something else, albeit still in the same industry, I'm going to go and do something else that I just think I'm more suited towards. That took me about 6 months to be able to make that leap and do it. But like, I'm so happy I did, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't know what type of job I would be doing now. So that was probably the biggest milestone, biggest piece that I'm most proud of. It's not like the best piece of work or the, you know, the most creative thing I've ever done, but like on a personal level, to just be like, I think I've worked myself out a little bit here. I need to go into a job that plays to my strengths more, and then I need to do it. That was pretty big.
And my last question is, what is the best advice that you've received, and then what is the best advice that you can give?
The answer is probably the same, if I'm totally honest, because the best advice I've been given is probably the best advice I could give. And there's two things that stick out to me that you know, people have told me over the years. The first one we touched upon earlier was the networking piece. Mm-hmm. And one of my old bosses is now one of my best friends. He said to me, like, never stop networking. It was like, whatever you do, never stop doing it, because you don't know where a conversation may lead now or in the future. So always put yourself out there. He said, even if you don't naturally feel like you're that person. And like, honestly, even now, the thought of like going into a room where I know nobody and having to strike up conversation, that's not a natural thing for me, if I'm completely honest with you. But it's like, it could bring so many opportunities. So that's one. And then the second one was another guy who's a former boss, and he's a bit of a career and life coach for me now, to be completely honest with you. He's always said to me that like, your own authenticity is never worth sacrificing. So like, basically like, be yourself, like know when to dial up certain traits that you've got or dial them down based on who you're with, but don't ever like not be yourself. And if you find yourself in a scenario where you've got to be something that's not you, That's not the situation or the environment that you want to be in. So authenticity and networking, probably the two
fabulous,
biggest.
Fabulous. Really good advice there. Also, I love the fact that both those people that you've mentioned are still in your life in some way or another. And I think that's one of the things, because you build this network at work, you meet these people, you do end up making friends that become lifelong friends or mentors, coaches. Yeah. Like, it's incredible. Oh, you have been amazing, Jack.
It's been really, really nice to sit and talk with you both.
Yeah, well, I think we've really got under the hood there and learned some really great things. I mean, I kind of want to go and work at Publicis Group now. Don't tell my team. But you'll see my application soon, I reckon. But thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Nathan, you've been fantastic as well. We look forward to seeing you on a future episode of Behind the Future.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.